All rise. The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Please be seated. So our first case for argument today is 22-1704, Nichia Corporation versus DFS. Mr. Lucas, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Eric Lucas from Sherman and Sterling, on behalf of the appellant Nichia. Nichia appeals from an IPR final written decision in which the Board found the challenge claim to the 040 patent not unpatentable over the asserted prior art. In doing so, the Board committed multiple legal errors. First, while the Board provided at least a partial claim construction for the phrase, the mounting surface having a plurality of recesses, finding that the recesses are in the mounting surface itself, it never fulfilled its obligations under Homeland Housewares fully to construe the related offsets claim phrase that requires the offsets to be between the mounting surface and the conforming electrical contacts. Notwithstanding the Board's refusal to fully construe the offsets phrase, it found the claims not unpatentable precisely because it could not find the offsets in the prior art. Second, to the extent that the Board implicitly used the ordinary meaning of spaces for the word offsets, the combination of that construction and the construction for mounting surface having a plurality of recesses cannot be correct because the interplay of those two terms presents an impossibility and because the constructions taken together contravene the intrinsic evidence, including the patent figures and the prosecution history.
Counsel, can I ask you these issues that you're raising, what's the standard of review that we as an appellate court would apply?
De novo, Your Honor. Regarding
for the claim construction issue, is it de novo review?
Yes, Your Honor. Regarding the question of impossibility, it was not proper for the Board to have simply shrugged off such concerns by suggesting that there might be possible constructions of other claim terms not propounded by either party that might rectify the impossibility inherent in its constructions of requiring that the electrical contacts both conform to and be spaced apart from the mounting surface's recesses.
Well, one of the problems I have with your argument is you seem to demand that the Board construe more than it thought necessary to resolve your case. And we've repeatedly stated that it's appropriate for a lower tribunal to constrain itself to only what it needs to decide in order to resolve a case. So what's wrong with that? Why do you think in this instance the Board should have had to go further and resolve more than it thought necessary?
Your Honor, I think that the issue stems from the interrelationship between the mounting surface claim term and the offsets claim term, and therefore to just construe the mounting surface claim term and then not be able to find the offsets claim term that's wrapped up in that mounting surface claim term is a failure under the Board's duty under Homeland Housewares to resolve that.
I thought that the Board said the mounting surface has to have a plurality of recesses, and the petition, that meaning something that has, when they say recesses, it has to have some sort of shape that's non-planar. But then what happened was the mounting surface that was identified in the petition by the petitioner actually was a straight line. So they said the mounting surface does not have a plurality of recesses in the prior. Why did they have to do more than that?
That's right, Your Honor. That was the argument in the petition. During the deposition of DSS's expert, Dr. Baker, he identified a mounting surface that followed the contours of the recesses, as you were describing, and in Nichia's reply during the IPR, it explained how that construction was not meaningfully different with respect to measuring the offsets between a planar projection of that mounting surface and the underside of the electrical contacts.
Are you talking now about your alternative argument?
That's right, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, so what is this, what prior art are you focusing on there with that? Is it
the Kim reference the would Kim be reference. The first reference that we put forward, but we made that argument in the reply briefing with respect to all of the prior art references.
And so this is your alternative argument where you say that Kim has a mounting surface that is non-planar and therefore meets the board's. But I thought that the board said that Kim didn't teach that. In other words, that Kim didn't have a mounting surface that had a plurality of recesses.
What the board said on Appendix 18, Your Honor, is that under the alternative argument, Kim lacked the offsets that were measured between the underside electrical contacts and the mounting surface.
I'm looking at page 18 of the record. Could you tell me which sentence you're focusing on?
The sentence that begins in the first paragraph, contrary to the claims requirement that the device itself comprise a mounting surface with recesses and electrical contacts that are sized to provide, and then it's italicized, offsets between said mounting surface and said electrical contacts, both Kim's device and the figure 4A embodiment show recesses between the device and a flat surface on which the device is mounted.
Well, maybe it's the flat surface on which the device is mounted is the thing that they were referring to as the mounting surface. How am I supposed to know that they didn't also rely on the fact that Kim doesn't have a mounting surface or doesn't show a mounting surface that's non-planar?
Well, I think that the analysis for each of the prior art references is in two parts in the board's final written decision. The first part begins on 17, where it discusses the planar mounting surface with respect to Nitschia's construction that it put forth in the petition. And then part two of the analysis is under the alternative argument where the recesses are in the mounting surface itself under DSS's expert's construction.
One of the problems I'm having with your alternative argument is when I look at Kim and what it teaches, I feel like you just drew in a line that was non-planar and that Kim doesn't actually say that that line that you drew is the mounting surface. And I think the board may have felt the same way based on the sentence that it has at the top of page 18. So could you tell us where in Kim you think it discloses a mounting surface the way you've drawn it in your briefs?
Yes, Your Honor. So the purported inventive concept, if you will, of the 040 patent is that there are recesses that provide room for solder to affix the electronic device to a printed
circuit. Sometimes it's helpful in these arguments to like point to us where in the appendix we should look to for the teaching you're relying on so we can follow the record as you're telling us what your answer is. I think this might be one of those circumstances where that would be helpful.
If you still have the final written decision open, you can look at Appendix 16 where two of the figures from the Kim prior art reference are reproduced. And the figure 3 Kim reference, while the red line is shown in that annotation as being Nitschia's initially proposed construction, you can see where the zigzag electrical contacts, which are designated as 32 and 31 in that figure, you can see how there's solder underneath of those two electrical contacts.
Does the description describe solder as being underneath those two?
I believe it's either solder or some other type of adhesive that affixes this electronic device to a printed circuit board or some other type of substrate, Your Honor.
Can you point us to where that is in the Kim reference itself so we can actually follow along with what you're stating?
So the Kim reference begins on Appendix 477, and that's the Japanese version. There's a translation that's behind it that begins on Appendix 482. And then the figure 3 that I was discussing that's reproduced in the final written decision is on Appendix 486. And you can see in the description of figure 3 on Appendix 485, where it says brief description of the drawings, it says this is a longitudinal, with respect to figure 3, it says this is a longitudinal cross-section view showing the situation in which one example of a bottom lead semiconductor package of the present invention is mounted on a printed circuit board.
Where does it say, which claim, which element in figure 3 is identified as being the circuit board?
It's 40.
Yes, 40, Your Honor.
And so why is it that 40 isn't the red line that the petition identified?
Under which argument, Your Honor?
Well, I understand you've got alternative arguments for what the prior art teaches, but it's hard to see why is it that your first argument was incorrect. Why should you be able to arbitrarily write what the mounting surface is, depending on the fit? Your reference doesn't seem to teach the alternative that you're seeking.
I see what you're asking, Ron. The claim is about a surface-mountable electronic device, and it's that device that has to include the mounting surface. And so that's why the bottom of the semiconductor package in the Kim reference is identified as the mounting surface and not the printed circuit board itself. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
I think so.
Can we talk more about your impossibility argument? Can you turn to Appendix 707?
Yes, Your Honor.
To the top of 708. It seems to me there is talking some about these terms that you've been bringing forth to us with respect to conform and offset. I just want you to kind of explain more what you think your possibility argument is and the grounds for it.
So this is the patent owner response, Your Honor. So the way that these claim terms are written require that the electrical contacts conform to the recesses that are under the board's instruction in the mounting surface itself. And then at the end of the claim limitation, it requires there to be offsets between the mounting surface and those electrical contacts that conform to the mounting surface's recesses. So if the mounting surface zigzags up where the electrical contacts are, then there can't be an offset or a space between the mounting surface and those electrical contacts, and that is the impossibility that we're referencing.
So it seemed to me, at least on 707 to 708, they're explaining how these terms could be consistent and that there would not be such an impossibility. So I guess I'm asking you, what is your response to that?
This is with reference to the district court's explanation of how there might be a construction that doesn't render the claims indefinite. Is that?
Yeah, if you just even look at what's at the bottom of 707 to 708, if you have a response to it, if you don't,
yes,
fine too, but I'm just trying to get that out.
Your Honor, my response would be that as I read that proposal from the district court, that would require there to be a space above the electrical contacts and underneath the body or the mounting surface of the semiconductor package, and that is not an embodiment that's anywhere shown in the 040 patent, and I think that that explanation is just not supported by the intrinsic record, and that's that would be my response.
We have an opinion, Phillips, it's an in-bank decision that says, you know, how you're going to perform claim construction.
Yes, Sean.
It gives lots of guidance, and one of the things it says is that we're not going to construe claims to be valid, right? You shouldn't construe claims to be valid. So why should the claim have to be construed if the plain language doesn't cover what's described in the specification? Why does it have to be construed to be consistent with the specification?
I do think that there's intrinsic evidence that supports such a construction, namely the patent figures and the prosecution history, where the applicant stated that the claims as amended read on those patent figures, and so that informs the construction of the mounting surface and offsets limitation.
I know you're almost out of your rebuttal time, and I'm going to restore your time, but let me ask one last question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is your argument related to Kim? Is it focused on whether Kim does or does not disclose a mounting surface, i.e., what the prior art discloses, or do I have to first agree with your claim construction in order to get to your Kim argument? I'm trying to appreciate whether it's truly an alternative or whether it is conditional upon me first agreeing with your claim construction.
I don't think it's conditional that Kim discloses a mounting surface in light of the description in that prior reference that it's mounted on a printed circuit board and there's solder that's placed inside of those recesses that
angle. There's nothing in the Kim reference that says there's solder placed inside those recesses.
In that figure, you can see that there's some adhesive that's affixing.
No, it doesn't say that there's an adhesive if it's affixing it. You're right. There is some grayish matter there. But you're an attorney, and your argument, with all due respect, is not evidence. There's nothing in the reference itself that discloses what that is. And so I guess that was what I was getting to. In the beginning, Judge Stoll asked you what the standard of review is. So what's the standard of review on this question, the question about what Kim does or does not disclose?
I believe it's de novo review.
No. What a prior art reference teaches is review for substantial evidence. Okay, let's hear from opposing counsel, and I will restore your full 4 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Before I begin, I'd just like to put on the record, and especially relevant to today, that Professor Moore was my teacher in for Patton Law and George Hazen, and I think I graduated before you started teaching.
Okay.
May it please the court, my name is Matthew Smith, and I represent the Appellee DSS Incorporated. I'd first like to review the invention. While the claims of the 040 patent are directed to a surface-mountable electronic device, there are minimal electronic components recited in the claims. Instead, the invention focuses on the package body. In short, the invention is a box. It's a very specifically shaped box, but a box nonetheless. And as with all boxes, the embodiments described in the 040 patent are three-dimensional. The patent's figures may only show top and side views of the devices, but they are three-dimensional. We have included a demonstrative on page 5 of our Appellee's brief showing a 3D rendering of the figures of 4A and 4B in three dimensions. This is not a new concept. For example, Nietzsche's expert declaration had a similar rendering, which is on page 354 of the appendix. And likewise, in its deposition of DSS's expert Dr. Baker, Nietzsche presented another version of the 3D renderings, which is on page 1128 of the appendix. While Nietzsche clearly understands that the devices of the 040 patent are three-dimensional, they try to force the claim language to fit two-dimensional drawings, specifically figure 4A, by trying to fit a square peg into a round hole.
So would you, Mr. Smith, say that the board's construction allows that claim to capture figure 4A, or do you think the board's construction excludes figure 4A as an embodiment from the scope of the claim?
That's a good question. I think that the board's construction includes figure 4A. I think that the board, throughout its arguments, I mean its decision, had it always throughout its decision, included caveats that either directly stated or implied that Nietzsche's interpretation of figure A, was what the claims did not read on. For example, in the final written decision, on page 11 of the appendix, the board asserted that it was Nietzsche's reliance on figure 4A alone, which caused the uncertainty in the claim language. Likewise, on the next page, the board implies that there is no support for Nietzsche's interpretation of figure 4A that falls within the scope of Claim 1.
Can you tell us what the standard is for the board? In these IPRs, the statute says they're not allowed to address indefiniteness. So what is it that they should do in a situation like that, according to our case law? And what is it that you think they did in this case?
The case law says that they have to not render a decision if they found it impossible to render a decision. But the case law also allows for them to render a decision in cases where, for example, in the Intel case, where the at least one element of the claim was missing from the prior arts, and that was not reaching the impossibility of other elements, they were able to make that determination.
And here they say we only need to construe the claim so much as to resolve the validity, anticipation, obviousness issue before us, so we don't have to construe it any more than that.
Correct. They construe the term mounting surface to have recesses in the sides and the mounting and the mountings to be actually a part of the device.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Were you finished?
Oh, I was just going to say that they didn't need to construe everything else because they found those elements missing from the prior art.
Is there a companion district court litigation to this?
Yes.
IPR? And so I assume indefiniteness is an issue being raised there. I don't know what the status of this.
Yeah, the case is currently stayed pending this decision here, but the indefiniteness was brought up in the district court case in a motion to dismiss, I believe. I'm not involved in that case.
Are you reserving it to be addressed during the claim construction phase? Is that what's happening?
I think they haven't gotten to claim construction as far as I understand.
Sure, but my question to you is, would indefiniteness be addressed in construction in the district court case?
Yes. Okay. The claim construction does not lead to any sort of impossibility. It is Nietzsche's opinion that the construction is impossible because the device cannot have both a mounting surface with recesses to which the electrical contacts can form and a mounting surface and contacts that are spaced apart by an offset.
Can I also ask you about the same pages I asked your opposing counsel about?
Sure.
Can we look at Appendix 70, 78? And if you think there are better pages we should look at instead, I'm open, but I want to talk about the impossibility issue a little bit further than that, but I think you were pivoting to as well.
707, you said?
Yes, Appendix 707.
In page 707, it's addressing the Kim reference and not specifically addressing the possibility of the claims of the 404 patent.
Maybe I'm not in the right spot. So the part I was focused in on 707 was at the bottom, the beginning of the additional language, going on to the top of 708. I talked a little bit with your opposing counsel about it, and I thought it would be fair game for you to also address it. This is what was argued
in the district court. Right, so that's just one example of a way to construe the claims that would not lead to impossibility of the 404 patent. And that's what the district court found. Nietzsche argues that the board stated that neither party had sufficiently explained how to solve Nietzsche's impossibility position. However, the board did not actually state that an impossibility exists, only that neither party sufficiently explained how the elements were arranged. In fact, the board never confirmed there was an impossibility. Instead, the board correctly found that it could address...
Your opposing counsel was focusing a lot on Kim, and whether Kim, this alternative argument that they have, that Kim actually features an mounting surface that's not a planar and thus has recesses. What is your response to that? One question would be, what do you think the standard of review is there? Is it a factual question or a legal question?
What a reference teaches, I believe, is reviewed under substantial error.
Substantial evidence, it's a factual question. And what is your view, what is your response to the assertion that Kim teaches a mounting surface that has recesses?
Well, the Kim reference, first of all, the non-planar interpretation of the claim language, we do not agree with. We do not think that there is a non-planar mounting surface. That was something that first
in Kim, you don't
in Kim or in the 404 reference, the 404 patent. We think that the mounting surface is a flat surface that has recesses in the side body. There is nothing in that language that supports that it's non-planar. And the Kim reference, they've drawn several ways where they think that the Kim reference reads on the claims of the 404 patent, but we disagree that that's true. Kim is missing, besides for the mounting surface is missing other elements from the claim language.
Well, focusing on the mounting surface, since that's really what the board is able to resolve the dispute under.
Right.
What do you think I should look at in Kim for your substantial evidence to support the board's view that Kim doesn't teach a mounting surface, that their interpretation of Kim would be alternative, that that's not actual mounting, actually a mounting surface?
But at no point does Kim show that there are recesses in the sides of the mounting surface as the patent office found. I mean, yeah, the patent office found that the plain language requires.
Can you point us to a JA page to answer Judge Stoll's question in particular?
Well, on the next page, 709, shows it as a flat surface on which the device is mounted, and that's not...
I think, didn't your opposing counsel take us to Kim? I think it was around Appendix 485 he had us at one point, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
Beginning around 42, at least the translation, is that right? Am I in the right spot?
The translation of Kim is... I believe it 482. Oh, well. 498, I believe, is the beginning of the English translation. Okay. Oh, sorry, that's the next one. I went too far.
Really, yeah, 482. Step on Judge Stoll's hold. I was just hoping to follow along in the reference itself as you answered the question.
Right. So on page 486, they show the embodiments of their Kim's reference, and our position is that there is no side recesses that is shown in Kim at any point on this device, as the board found.
I mean, so what's missing? I mean, figure 3 in Kim looks so much like figure 4A of the patent to me. So what's the problem? What's missing?
Well, if you look at figure 4 of Kim, these apparent...
I'm looking at figure 3.
Right. Oh, but okay. Figure 3 is the side view and figure 4 is the top view.
Got it.
So if you look at figure 4 and figure the portion of that's where 45 is that you pointed out earlier, is the open spaces in figure 4, so that there's no sort of recess in the mounting surface. These are missing portions of the device itself.
I don't understand. Number 45 isn't shown on figure 4.
Right. But the position where it is would be those, I don't know what to call them, but like the holes in the side of the device where it makes a bunch of U-shapes, where 32 is referenced. 32 is labeled the internal lead. But these are holes in the device, and it's mounted on 62. So it doesn't have recesses in the side body as claimed in the 404 patent.
Okay, anything further, Mr. Smith?
No, that's it. Thank you. If you have no further questions.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sharon. So if we go back to the Kim reference on pages 484 of the appendix and then we'll go to 485 next, but I want to point out two paragraphs in Kim that talk about solder and mounting the Kim reference. In paragraph 7, this is describing Kim at a high level. In view of this current situation, the present invention is directed to providing a bottom lead semiconductor package and a method of manufacturing the same, in which in mounting the bottom lead semiconductor package on a board, such as a printed circuit board, a strong solder joint is made. The mounting height of the package can be minimized, and the bottom leads can be arranged at a high density. And I believe that that is similar to what the 040 patent describes as it's the purpose of its invention. And I'd also like to direct the panel to paragraph 19 on 485, and that's a description of figure 3 of Kim. And it's describing figure 3 as a longitudinal cross-sectional view showing the situation in which a bottom lead semiconductor package, according to the present invention, is mounted on a printed circuit board. The lower faces of the bottom lead groups 31 are directly adhered to the upper face of the printed circuit board 40. An electrical connection to this board is made by way of solder 45, which is injected into the grooves 38, respectively.
Perfect.
Formed.
So it's not attorney argument, Kansas. Well done.
Thank you, Your Honor. Apologies for not having that at my fingertips before. One other point that I would like to make with respect to the board's construction with respect to figure 4A in particular is that the board explicitly found that figure 4A is not within the scope of claim 1 of the 040 patent, and we made an argument in pages 71 and 72 of the blue brief that based on that finding, none of the other patent figures that we reproduced in that section would be covered by the board's interpretation as well, and I believe that that's indicative of the errors that occurred here, is that none of the embodiments of the invention would be covered by the board's interpretation of mounting surface.
That's just assuming that the board was correct on that. And where does that leave it? You know, there's a, I would suggest there's maybe a written description enablement problem, maybe, but claims shouldn't be interpreted to solve invalidity problems, right?
That's right, Your Honor. I believe that goes to the indefiniteness or the impossibility issue that we were presenting in this appeal, and therefore the final written decision should be vacated and even the institution decision, perhaps, such that no estoppel would apply.
What is the difference between impossibility and indefiniteness versus written description?
Written description has to do with whether there are words in the specification that describe the embodiments. And the impossibility indefiniteness issue has to do with whether it is logically and physically possible for there to be conforming electrical contacts and a space between the mounting surface and those electrical contacts that are supposed to conform to the recesses in the mounting surface.
Whether the claim language itself is so confusing or what it describes as impossible to satisfy.
That's right.
You haven't lost the indefiniteness argument. I mean, you still can make that in the district court, correct?
We can still make that in the district court.
And you have now, in addition, I guess, collateral estoppel, should they try to argue something different about the construction in the district court.
What we do, that's true, Your Honor. What we do have, though, is estoppel based off of 102-103 paper prior art and a final written decision comes with that estoppel provision under 315E.
But that doesn't affect your 112 arguments.
It doesn't, but it does preclude us from arguing any paper prior art in the district court litigation.
Not any paper prior art, only paper prior art that you knew or should have known of at the time you brought the IPR, right?
I can't remember if we stipulated whether it was broader than that or not, but it's very possible that we might have. And so if we did, that would be an even broader
That's on you, though, if that's the case.
That is true, Your Honor.
So, any non-paper prior art? You were very specific. Do you have any non-paper prior art that you were going to argue?
I'm not sure at this time.
Is that privilege where you can't tell me? I think that you're hesitating.
I'm not aware of any non-paper prior art at this moment that we have that we're intending to argue in the district court, but I'm not sure if we are able to find any.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lucas. We take this case under submission. Thank both counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.